accession number 23378, reel 11.
What was the feeling on the knowledge of Keyes being taken prisoner, and how was it to affect the morale of the men?
Keyes was very popular. He'd only been with us since January 1942, when he took over just before we left the Middle East. And he'd welded the battalion into a fine fighting unit, a happy battalion. A battalion very confident in its own ability to work as a good battalion. And he was a great commander. Quiet man, not given to many words, but he was sincere and you could feel that you'd rely on him. And therefore he had the trust and confidence of the troops. And to lose your commander under circumstances which you didn't quite know where he was devastating. And I can remember groups of the troops just looking glum and just sitting down and exhausted, both physically and mentally. Morale could have been better. So there were two jobs to be done. One was to restore morale as quickly as possible, not a moment to lose, and to reorganise various stages of command and make certain that we had a relevant fighting unit.
Tell us how you reorganise, firstly, the morale of troops that are so low.
We're in a fairly contracted area behind on the Moresby side of Alala, and so you're able to move around, physically move around and talk to individuals and lance corporals in charge of platoons and sergeants in charge of balance of companies. You're able to talk to them and tell them what had happened. Key was missing. I was taking over and making sure they build up confidence in myself. It's one thing to have badges of rank on your shoulder, another thing to be able to do the job. You can only do that by building trust. If that trust goes, all else is lost.
How did you believe in yourself in relation to Keyes and his reputation? To what degree did you feel you could fill his shoes?
I didn't think in terms of filling his shoes as such. I felt in terms of here I had a body of men who had two jobs to do. One, they had to restore belief in their own ability, and two, they had to keep the enemy on the other side of Port Moresby. So long as we had somebody between them and then we had a chance. And to fight a tactical withdrawal is pretty difficult, really, because you've got to, if you go too early from a position, you give the enemy a chance to follow you up. If you go too late, you're likely to lose by standing and fighting. So it's a matter of judgment when you move from any position, from an individual up to a subunit. So you're very active, especially when you've got no communication other than your good self or a runner.
Adding to the stress of the situation.
Yeah. No, I never thought in terms of taking over from Keyes. In fact, I was only the minister command of the battalion until after the battle at Brigade Hill on the 9th of September 9 days after taking command, I was told that Hugh Challen, the brigade major, would come down and look after the battalion. I'd revert to second in command.
At the point when Keyes is taken prisoner, tell us what was to follow.
Well, at Alola, we moved back to Eora Creek. And the 2nd 16th and their cells alternated the front position. We combined well with the 2nd 16th, they were a good battalion. Good fighting battalion. And after Eora Creek, we moved back to Myola and through to Afogi, where we took up the Battle of Brigade Hill.
At Myola, I understand, around about the 3rd of September, were supplies there for you at this time?
There were supplies. I don't know what quantity, but what supplies were there, we attempted to destroy, which seemed to only a few days earlier would have used them. But they couldn't be left for the Japs. Because they too were running into the same problems that we were having, short of supplies and falling down with sickness. And
given that you were on a tactical withdrawal, had this been an official idea that had been adopted, or at the time were you literally just falling back as the enemy came forward?
No, it was an official position. We were to keep ourselves between the enemy and Port Moresby. The method of doing it was tactical withdrawal. The operators were from Alola to Mission Ridge, 2nd 14th and 2nd 16th alternating, and we met early September. We met the 2nd 27th in position at Afogi, at the bottom of the hill, on the rise going backwards towards Mission Ridge. A full battalion, having taken over the position from the 39th Battalion, who were marched out of battle, having done a good job. And the 2nd 27 bore the brunt of the 3-day battle at Mission Ridge. The 2nd 16th and 14th were attacked in turn until finally we were forced out of that position, and we did the swoop round, and next morning met up at the brigade headquarters and various oddments of troops at Minari. The Japs were coming over the hill, and they were met by this people that had been brought up from Moresby, and they were left out of battle personnel. They were people that who were carrier drivers and transport drivers and so on. Not used to fighting in the battle at close quarters like they had to. But they did the job, and we were to move back finally to Eora Baiwa, where we occupied a forward slope Now, we'd been through a hell of a lot by that stage. People were becoming a bit ragged and fragile.
As I understand, at Brigade Hill, there was a situation where the operational headquarters had been taken. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do.
Tell us what you recall of that situation.
Well, if you can imagine a hill coming up from a creek in a village, fairly steep. It was the 27th down below, and the 16th, and the 14th. Occupying positions astride the track. Further back still was brigade headquarters on the top of the ridge. Their method of protection was from gentlemen from the old guard, old fellows, is it, which had been turned into a protective force for the brigade headquarters. They had a limited use, of course, being old and not used to being attacked, except by aeroplanes, I suppose, before. The Japanese had employed their tactics of going around the flank and they attacked brigade headquarters. Then they came in a position whereby the 2nd 16th and their cells, the 2nd 14th, their remnants, were either to mount a counter-attack along the western flank of the track towards the Brigade Hill to relieve Brigade Headquarters, company from the 2nd 16th, and the company from the 2nd 14th. They started off in their attack and they were mowed down, only two or three of them getting through. So that made it impossible for the rest of the battalions to come back through the track. It's pretty dramatic. The moment of communication. So it happened that the wireless that was attempting to used to get through on occasions, rather like the comedy section where a fellow hits the set and it comes on and it goes off again. Anyway, it came on this occasion. And the message was, tell Albert, that was Albert Kero, the commander of the 2nd 16th, that if we go, that's brigade headquarters, then he is to take command. The question, briefly, very briefly, and full of static, the question of a probability of a counter-attack was mooted, and then the wireless went off, leaving Captain Roden representing the 2nd 14th, Albert Kero representing the 2nd 16th, and Cooper from the 2nd 27th. Some people thought that only being a captain, the two colonel, half-colonels would override me. But to their credit, they respected the position which I occupied, and I had full consultation with them. They treated me as a fellow CO, which is gratifying. And so it came about that the counter-attack was decided upon, which failed. No dramatic moments. Wasn't much between us and them at that stage.
The seriousness of the situation at this point with the brigade headquarters under such threat.
Mm.
What was the discussion that you had in relation to your situation that you were privy to?
Well, the pros and cons of it were worked through. was realised that we were taking a risk. The likelihood of failure was ever present. But was there anything that could be done? We couldn't skip away without doing something. It was quite clear that we were not going to be there for much longer unless we did something. It was a hard decision to make. But it was proper that it was made.
In this scenario, the rules of war, do they still apply?
Rules of war, are there any? What rules are you thinking of?
People talk of the right, the wrong way to conduct a war. In somewhere like a jungle, on the Kokoda Track, for instance, how do they apply?
Well, I wasn't aware of any rules that I had to comply with. It was a war, and I thought the way to win a war is to occupy positions, and if in so doing you kill people, so be it. Prisoners of war, if you took any, had to be treated in a humane way. It's about the only rule of war that I knew of.
Were there ever prisoners of war taken, in your experience? In relation to taking Japanese prisoners of war?
Not on the Ian Stanley Track, in my experience. No. You've got to remember that we were in a defensive position first up, and then we were coming back, so the opportunity to take prisoners was not there. There might have been an isolated one or two.
And the Japanese, you mentioned that Keyes had been taken prisoner.
Mm.
Other instances were you aware of?
Yes, there were some taken, but we never knew really what happened to them as individuals.
People talk of the brutality that Japanese were often to use in places like Kokoda. Were you to experience anything that you would...
I had no vision of anything of that description.
So in relation to what we've been talking about, operational headquarters being taken, you mentioned that a plan had been made and then that was to fail. What was the outcome? How were you to rectify the situation ultimately?
Well, brigade headquarters moved back to Minari down the hill, and we had this ad hoc force that I mentioned, transport people, who provided a buffer between the enemy and Minari across astride the track. Meanwhile, the remnants of the 14th and 16th Battalion were moving around the flank by this newfound track. And the 2nd, 27th were moving their wounded out of their position and were moving around the flanks as well, but they were not as quick as we were because it was decided that the wounded, our wounded, would go with the 2nd 27th. So they would be looked after there. So therefore we became able to move faster than otherwise would have if we'd had to carry the wounded. When we stopped at nightfall on the move round, we were very low, and I'm credited with making a short talk to the troops there, and the people likened it to they were addressing a team at three-quarter time and they were 10 points down and kicking against the wind. the last quarter. I can't remember what I said, but I know I would have said something to the effect that we'd suffered a lot, we'd gained a lot, we could still win, and I expected that they would meet the challenge. I'm told by Stan Bissett, who has become my adjutant at that stage, the ex-rugby player, that was like a football address, and that he could see that people were reacting to it favourably. Whether that was so or not, I've got no idea. But it needed something to be said, because we could have easily thrown it away and become individuals instead of still a cohesive mob.
I'm interested to talk to you about the sorts, well, your understanding of the philosophy that, that the chaps adopted in relation to their situation.
I'd come from Australia to New Guinea full of hope to fight for Australia on Australian soil. Something new, different from the Middle East, where they are perhaps fighting somebody else's war, but certainly for freedom. But freedom came close to home, and they knew that if they failed, Australia was likely to be invaded. It put a new edge to their game. So everything they did not 100%, but perhaps 110. McCallum and Kingsbury is the evidence for that. And there are many more like them in all battalions. To fight for Australia and to know that the place is likely to go down if you don't succeed means a lot to a person. Sometimes in the stress and struggles that go on, you can lose sight of that, and you've got to remind them of it from time to time. That's probably what I did. They respond well to a challenge. It wasn't their own lives that were at stake, it was the lives of living people in Australia. They died in that struggle and yet succeeded. They would have died happy. Strange thought. That's the way things were. Desperate days. That's why the Understanding Campaign, the first phase of it, that's from Kokoda back to Moresby, so to speak, or Koitaki, was so vital, and why it was one of Australia's vital battles. It has been said that Gallipoli created a nation, Kokoda saved a nation. The next phase of the Understanding Campaign was the 25th Brigade coming through in about the middle of September.
In relation to your experience there, where was God? Was he ever present?
If by God you mean the padre, he was an excellent padre, but he got into appendicitis. So without the administrations of God through a living person. I don't think I heard God mentioned except through profanity. No doubt individuals thought of him. I'm certain they did. Teddy Bear, who was decorated MMDCM, which he won in the Remembrance Valley, was a godlike person. No doubt there are others like him.
Did
You know, he was a fierce soldier.
Were you a religious man?
No. I went to church, not regularly, but from time to time, like Christmas and Easter, but I believe I'm a Christian man, nevertheless.
At times of stress, times when critical moments were upon you, did you look or ask, pray to anyone in particular?
No.
You mentioned that the idea was to get back to Manari, and the second 27th you were separated from for this time. As I understand, Potts was to be relieved of his command or replaced by Porter on the 10th of September.
Mm.
You mentioned, I think, the 6th and the 8th?
6th to 8th of September was the Battle of Brigade Hill.
So between the 8th and the 10th, what was to occur?
Move round to Manari in the morning of the 11th. The adjustment, the move away from Manari that afternoon to through Narrow to Yorubaiwa.
You must defend Emita Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to people like MacArthur, people in Australia looking at the situation, people like MacArthur, I understand, were questioning why you weren't advancing, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to their comments in relation to the situation not being handled correctly?
MacArthur, as we know, was his own man. He was ambitious, arrogant. Never met the man. His communiques were always slanted. He didn't understand what was going on, the difficulties we had. Nobody could understand sitting at Brisbane, or at Melbourne, or in Canberra. Nobody could possibly understand it. And even when told and proved to them, they still didn't believe it afterwards.
People talk of an example of a position that must be held, the gap.
That was in the very early stages before the game really started. The gap, they can blow it up and that'll be that. But the gap was only formed by the alignment of the mountains through which aircraft could fly. It was misinterpreted. The hopeful people thought it was just a gap, astride a track which you could blow up and rocks would form. People would be stopped like a roadblock. Complete rubbish.
What about other examples of this lack of knowledge of the situation?
There's a place called Arrows Corner, which is 26 miles north of Moresby. It's the gateway to the track, where the track starts. It was named after a surveyor called Arrows. He was ordered to build a roadway to extend the track, extend the existing roadway from Owens Corner to Hugh Berry, the next staging post along the track. They started off to do it. They had no hope in hell. This country was too rugged.